welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. Recruiting is time-consuming, but what if you could filter through the noise and find the right players in minutes for free? With ProLook, athletes create detailed profiles with verified stats, academics, and highlight videos, so you can search for exactly what you need and connect with top talent instantly. And it's free for college coaches. Download ProLook today to start searching for your next recruit among many other coaches' features. Available for both Apple and Android devices. For more info, visit www.prolook.app. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. This week we sit down on location with the 8 head coaches at the NJCAA Division III World Series in Auburn, New York. In this week's ABCA podcast, we hear from Surrey Community College's Mark Tucker, Brookdale Community College's Johnny Johnson, Oakton Community College's Belfrado, SUNY Niagara's Matt Klingersmith, Dallas College Richland's Jimmy Brenneman, Northern Essex Community College's Jeff Mejia, Century College's Matt Erzar, and RCSJ Gloucester's Rob Valley. Congrats to Gloucester's players and staff on winning their third national championship in a row. Let's welcome everyone to the podcast. All right, here at number 6 seed Surrey, Mark Tucker, AD, has been the head coach multiple times here at Surrey, but head AD since 2005, but 36-12 record. Congrats for being here.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
What's the strength of this year's club? Looks like you're kind of balanced between hitting, pitching, and defense.
Yeah, I think you're right. Haven't hit a lot of home runs this year. We don't have a tremendous amount of team speed, but pretty much 1-3-9, we swing it pretty well. Got some balance in our lineup, and pitchers, for the most part, have kept us in the game, and we played pretty good defense. So it's really just trying to pitch it, play a little defense, and get some timely hitting.
Any players to key in on this week?
Yeah, Elijah Palmer's had a great year for us. Elijah he's a St. Bonaventure signee. He was a Region 10 Player of the Year this year. Also, Zach Helms. Zach was our Region 10 and Mid-Atlantic District Tournament MVP as a pitcher. So those two guys are key for us. Throughout our lineup, we have some guys we have a lot of confidence in, but Palmer hits in the middle of our order and really kind of gets us going.
Any good surprises on the roster? Maybe guys you didn't expect to do anything or maybe not get as much time to have?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a tremendous amount of injuries this year. Our assistant coaches and I were looking at it the other day. I think we've had 18 kids that started the year in the fall that are no longer with us due to either one reason or the other, and most of those have been through injuries. So we've definitely had some guys step up. We lost our starting right fielder, Colby Umbarger, who was an East Carolina transfer, and Jaden Johnson's filled in there, done a great job. So, all the way around, we've just had guys step up all year.
Prepare any different this week for coming up here?
On the turf. Our local high school was nice enough, turf football field. So we've been on a turf football field for the better part of a couple weeks, and Surrey Central High School, which is actually next door to our college, and we have a great partnership with them, so it's great to get out there and use the turf. So we haven't taken any ground balls, I don't think, in 2 weeks off of grass, so we've just been exclusively on the turf.
When's the last time you played in 50 degree weather with rain?
Hasn't been that long ago.
We get spoiled.
Hasn't been that long ago, yeah. So, but it's definitely going to be a little bit of a shock coming from high 70s, low 80s. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Any adversity this year? Looked like only lost back-to-back games a couple times, but you guys have been 20-1 since, I think, in March. You guys have been rolling since the end of March.
Yes, sir. Had a rough series against Caldwell, who won our regular season, and we dropped three games to them, the third one being a really tough loss, kind of gave that game away. And ever since then, things have really clicked. Like you said, won 15 in a row, 19 out of 20. So we kind of, you know, it's kind of for us, the sum is greater than the parts, really. You know, we kind of put it all together as a team and played really well as a team.
What do you credit for that turnaround? Was that player-driven? Was that you having a conversation with them?
No, I think it was all player-driven. I think everything, you know, was based around our players. I think they gained some confidence, you know, in winning some games. We had a couple big non-conference wins, beating Catawba Valley, which is in the D2 World Series in Enid. And I think those were a couple big wins, and I think it kind of showed our kids that they could play at this level.
How many World Series appearances is this for you?
For me as a coach, it's been 27 years between appearances. 1998, Batavia, New York. I was a young coach then, and I got handed a couple of lessons by veteran coaches, especially Barry Davis from Gloucester in game one. We had an appearance in 2017 at Tusculum. I was the athletic director then only. So this is our third World Series appearance.
How have you balanced your AD responsibilities with coaching?
It's been tough, been really tough. Our softball team's actually in the D3 softball World Series this week, so was hoping to get out and see our ladies play, and unfortunately that may not work out unless we have some weather issues, but it's been tough to balance that out. But, you know, just trying to put our student-athletes first and foremost.
How do you handle that as an athletic director? I mean, it probably helps that you had a coaching background going to an athletic director, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, stepping away and coming back to coach, there's a few things that are obviously different. You know, the timing stuff has driven me crazy with the pitch clock and those type of things, and all the other stuff that goes into it. But you know, at the end of the day, it's baseball, and it's been played the same for, you know, over 100 years. So that's definitely helped, though, having that background.
What tips would you give for somebody that does have to do AD responsibilities and also coach? Because we have quite a few member coaches that have to do both.
Absolutely. Have a good wife, number one. and I'm thankful to have a great wife. But family support's definitely important for that. But, you know, it comes down to time management and prioritizing things and trying to certainly delegate. We've got some good assistants on our staff this year. Not only with baseball, but softball as well. So trying to delegate some responsibilities to them is important.
What do you use time management-wise that maybe you didn't use early in your career? What do you use now that helps that maybe you didn't use early in your career time management-wise?
Well, you know, now everything's more electronic in terms of everything that we're doing. So, you know, that's been a big help. I'm not a great tech-savvy person. Thank goodness I got some family members that can help me with that. But, you know, that's a big thing that's helped me throughout, you know, saving some time and so forth.
What does the state of North Carolina mean to you?
The state of North Carolina? Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, I love where I live. I love the school I'm at. And we have a great president. Our president, Dr. Shockley's actually up here. In fact, we ate breakfast this morning together. He's supporting our student athletes. He's gone to softball. Hoping to get back for the banquet tonight for baseball, so he'll be around at both locations. He flew in a couple days ago to Syracuse to support both of our teams. So, you know, the administration support's been great for us. We truly appreciate that, and our student athletes. So it's been a great ride so far.
Any tips for hiring good people?
Just, you know, trying to find someone that fits your needs and your location and so forth. That's the big thing, really, is just trying to find that right fit.
For some other shout outs before I let you go?
My family, 2.5 year old grandson Grayson, who I'm anxious to get back and see and anxious to watch him grow up. My daughter, who's going to be up here, Avery, she's actually a graduate assistant at the NJCA National Office, so it'd be good to reconnect with her. Chris Parker, longtime friend.
He's coming up too,
president
by the way.
Yeah, he texted me as soon as we won.
It's Eli's first time here.
Yes, absolutely. And I both. Yes, and Chris texted me as soon as we won, and see you in Auburn. So looking forward to, you know, seeing Chris. We've been dear friends for a long time. So, yeah, it's just been great. You know, I was the D3 baseball chair for the past 3 years and vice chair before that. So last year I was here in Auburn. Didn't think I'd ever come back to Auburn, I'll be honest with you. But here I am, and it's been great to reconnect with all the folks that run the tournament here, and you know, all the friends, Wally Reynolds, who was my vice chair, and Dan Blair, who's now running it, a good friend of mine. So it's been great.
Thanks for time, Mark. Good luck.
Absolutely.
This week.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. Thanks.
Number 3 seed Brookdale, Johnny Johnson, 40-9 record coming in, 26th season.
Yes, sir.
Here at Brookdale. So congrats for being here.
Thank you very much.
What strengths of this year's club? 387 team batting average, 135 doubles, 40 triples, 44 home runs.
Yeah, this team is just an average bunch of guys. You know, this is probably the least talented team we ever had here, but probably the hardest working team. They just battle straight through. They bought into the system and they're working hard. Like you said, same thing with the pitchers. You know, there's no outstanding pitchers, but they all compete and throw strikes there.
What do you contribute to triples?
We have some guys who can run. You know, like I said, they were gap hitters. They hit the ball in the gap, and a couple guys can run pretty good.
What are the players who watch this week?
Our catcher, he's probably one of the best hitters in the region, Shane Andrews. And the region player of the year, our center fielder, Declan Sheehan, came out of nowhere. Didn't even play high school baseball, but made himself into a legit baseball player. And our shortstop does a great job. You know, he's a lockdown shortstop, Justin Lopez.
How does he go from not playing in high school and then deciding to play?
I think high school coaching. There's a kid that had some talent, just needed to be coached, and he bought into the system, and he ended up being a pretty good hitter.
How did he reach out to you and say, hey, I haven't played high school baseball, but I'd like to play?
A lot of guys just come and try out for a team, because we have two programs, Ocean County College and Brookdale, right next to each other. And they come here, they try out. I never cut anybody. I let everybody come on, I let them cut themselves, you know, because I said, listen, if I didn't recruit you and there's somebody out there better than you, it's going to be very hard to play here. And usually the first half of the day, they're gone. Next day, half of them are gone. And there's always 8 to 9 stragglers that stay on, get better. Some of them redshirt, end up playing pretty good for us.
Any surprises on the roster? People you didn't expect to play that had good years?
The Sheehan kid's number one kid. You know, he's been, and then our third baseman, Junior Nunez, who played behind an All-American National Player of the Year last year, Rocco Brzezniak. You know, he was just sat on a bench last year, worked his butt off, and he became a pretty good third baseman for us, and he's had some timely hits. And our freshman right fielder, Casey Gardner, you know, at first the game was a little too fast for him, but now he's starting to pick up on it.
How do you handle that with your freshmen, maybe with the trying to handle the transition? It's going to be fast for them. How do you help them through that transition?
You know, it's just the way our program works, our sophomores run our program. You know, that's why I put a lot of pressure on our sophomores to carry them, the freshmen, till the halfway point. Because I always call this the freshman 25. By 25, game 25, their legs are dead, they're hurting. And they said, no way, coach, I'm in great shape. But they've been trained for the last 4 years of their life to play 25 games. They don't realize it. And everyone comes back and says, you're right, coach. But now, once they get over that hump, they start understanding you're not a freshman anymore. And it's just, we're just drilling in their head, listen, you can play here.
You prep any different this week coming here?
No, it's the same thing. Like I said, this team, you can't put pressure on them, because the teams in the past, we've had some outstanding, you know, Division I guys getting drafted. This is an all-average team. How they got here, you know, it's just a whole team together. Like, Gloucester's a great team in our program, and we can compete with Gloucester anytime. It's just, we got to play a perfect game to beat anybody.
What does that do for you guys, beating Gloucester, the district?
You know, it's
because it's been 18 in a row, right?
Hey, pretty much it was. Northampton, had Northampton there and Cumberland. Like, the last couple of years, I thought we had a better team, talent-wise, but it's just, they know how to win, man. Rob's a good guy, he's a good friend of mine, they know how to win. But the difference this year is, it's on a neutral site, the tournament, instead of at their home site. It's a different thing, but it's just, our kids, I hate to say it, are stupid. They don't understand who Gloucester is. You know what I mean? They just go out there and play baseball and do the best job they can. They battle, they never quit.
Have you had much adversity start of the year 12-0?
No, honestly, not at all. They just kept on competing. They did, and the longer they got, we played, the better we got.
And a quick turnaround for the districts was last Saturday,
yes,
correct?
Sir. Yep.
All right, so pretty much same routine that you've had.
The same thing. We, you know, we had the day off there. The problem is we had rain back home the whole week, so we were inside the, you know, gym, taking our cuts there, and the kids were loose, and they, you know, it's an experience. It's enjoy your time. We've been here plenty of times before, but I said, just enjoy your life. You're not gonna remember your batting average, but you can remember this time dogpiling, you know, in your these districts and playing against some of the best teams in the country here.
Real estate developer, I mean, how did you initially be like, okay, I can do this, but also I can coach too?
You know, it's just, it's so weird. When I first got out of college at UNLV, I was playing pro ball, and then a friend of mine said, hey, I got a coaching job for you, a freshman. I said, I don't want to get into the coaching. And he ended up leaving to go play for the Dallas Cowboys. Then I got addicted to it, and then it just happened. And my job is a real estate appraiser. You make your own hours, you do your own appointments. As long as you get your work in, you make your pay, you pay for your family, it makes it work. It's tough during the season.
Who'd you lean on initially to help you on the baseball side, coaching-wise, when you first got into it?
Honestly, it was all myself. Like I said, I had one friend of mine who played with me at Brookdale back in the day, Steve Swenson, who came with me from Bloomfield College. He helped out, and then I had four of my assistant coaches all play for me. So they would coach for me for 19 years. They ended up being some of my best friends, or younger than me, was in their weddings. And those guys, we were a family. Now they all have families and they moved on. And my main guy, Eddie Galante, who's been with me for the last 14 years, finally got a job on campus, so he can't coach anymore. So my two new coaches are doing a great job, Jay Blackwell and Jerry Malanga.
Have you had to adjust your coaching style at all over the years? Is it
no,
different
I'm
now
the
with
same
the kids?
Way I am. Like I said, I'm a tough coach to play
love
for.
It.
I demand perfection, you know, but I'm gonna put my arm around you and tell you I love you. You know, it's our thing is the family. You know, I'm going to push you and push you. I'm never going to let you be average. You know, I'm just one of those kind of guys when I am. If you want to be average, go somewhere else. Wear your hat the right way. You know, I played for some great coaches. Charlie Green at Miami-Dade. You know, Paul McLaughlin was a Hall of Famer at Brookdale and at UNLV. You know, Coach Dalmar just taught you to do things the right way. I'm an old school guy.
And that's the art of it, too. Like, how do you know as a coach where, okay, I'm going to push them up to this edge, but I'm not going to send them over the edge either?
You know, but the key is once you get on them, and then you tell them what you're doing and put your arm around them and say, listen, this is why we're doing it. And that's where your sophomores come in and your assistant coaches, because we have to have, my assistant coaches have to be the good guys, because I'm the tough guy and I'm going to put the arm around them. And these kids know when I rip on them, it's not because I hate you, because I want you to get better. I'm frustrated for you.
Any other shout outs before I let you go?
My family, my daughter is going to have her second baby down in Florida. You know, and my grandson's 2 years old, and if I can wait around for 18 more years, he'd be my shortstop down the road.
What has being a grandparent changed your perspective on life?
Tell you what, it's the best thing in since sliced bread. I love my daughter, but I tell you what, being a grandparent is second to none.
Thanks for your time, John.
All right, guys,
appreciate
you did a great job. Thank you.
All right, number 7 seed Oakton, head coach Bill Frato, for 13 seasons, correct? It's your 13th season?
13.
Also an Oakton grad, but 34-28, and then 2018 national champs. So thanks for jumping on with me.
No problem.
We go way back.
Yes, we do.
Way back.
Yeah, we do.
Back to Iowa and Western Illinois days. What's the strength of this year's team?
I would say, you know, the chemistry's been really good with the club, and I think offensively we're pretty sound. Oakton through the years has been an offensive club for sure. And I just think that this is one of my better teams offensively for sure, especially towards the end of the year we started putting it together.
You know, and we talked off camera, your guys' schedule, and I think that's the hard part from the outside looking in, is your schedule is going to be a little bit tougher than some other teams at your level.
Yeah, we're playing D1s, D2, JUCOs, and a lot of scholarship money out there and quality teams. There's no off days anymore in Region 4 for sure. So it definitely gets us ready if we can get to the World Series for sure.
With your weather early, doesn't always acclimate for you to be outside, so there might be some ups and downs a little bit early in the year for y'all too.
Absolutely. You know, we started out in Florida, we played really well, and we got back home and it was cold, and it took us a while to get rolling. But you know, once again, I think we're hitting it at the right time, and we'll see what happens.
How do you handle that from a training standpoint? You go to Florida. We all dealt with that in the upper Midwest. You go to Florida, you get outside for a while, and then you come back and you're inside. How are you handling kind of that competitive piece when you're stuck inside for a little bit?
Yeah, it's just like a daily grind, just trying to make sure we stay healthy and, you know, fight through those things.
Yeah. Any players to watch this week?
Collazo's pretty good. Ricky Collazo, he signed with St. Leo's. He's definitely an offensive threat. Pepe Buttacci, our three hitter from Venezuela, he's a really good player. Those are the two guys that make us go, basically, for sure.
Any surprises this year in the roster? Maybe guys you didn't expect to contribute as much as they have?
I got a freshman center fielder, Nick Bergen. He's hitting ninth, really good center fielder. He gets it in the gaps for sure. He's been a big part of this. What I like about this team is a lot of freshmen. I think freshman starters. Tyler Heath, the first baseman's, in my opinion, is one of the best gloves in Region 4. You know, I put him down for a gold glove. Not sure he's going to get it, but he's right up there with Collazo offensively, and he's a freshman, you know, and his brother is like our 10th or 11th guy, and he's going to be a starter for me next year, Brandon. And once again, there's our depth is good. I like the chemistry. They're grinding together, so, you know, we'll just see what happens.
Winning this in 2018, do you relay anything to the players coming up here?
What I learned from 18 to this team? Well, in 18 and 17, we were 12 games under 500, and then the same team came to the World Series and won it. This team was 12 games under 500, and we're back to the World Series, so I'm hoping history repeats itself.
Yeah, you had a seven-game skid in the middle of the year in April. How'd you get that thing turned around?
Just told them to keep on grinding. You know, we're playing some really good teams, and it's going to get us better, you know, as we get towards the finish line. So,
I mean, that's easier said than done. I mean, was that player driven to try to get out of that? Because a lot of teams would panic or even shut it down at that point. How did you kind of keep everybody together?
You know, I got a good coaching staff. We worked hard with the guys, and we just were trying to keep positive with them. Told them that good things are going to start happening. So just keep their heads up. That's all we can do. You know, it's a game of baseball, for sure. You know that.
For somebody who doesn't know how good junior college baseball is in the state of Illinois, what would you tell them?
It's good. Illinois is solid baseball, for sure. Region 4 is very good. You know, I always said there used to be a couple games where you call them off days. There's no off days anymore. You know, as a head coach, you want to try to get guys in and give them opportunities, but seems like every day is like it's like a you gotta put your battle. It's like a battle every day, you know. So,
what do you feel like's helped you the most in your career at this point?
Defibrillators, I guess. Yeah, you know. I mean, it's nice to have two of them on the bench with me now. So, I don't know. I've been doing this a long time, and I've been around some really good players in the Frontier League and. Even when I was with the Chicago Cubs for 5 years, it's, you know, you learn a lot of things and you just try to, you know, bring it and pass it on to other people.
What have you taken out of your Frontier League experience?
Just to, you know, that I learned that in the Frontier League, there's really good players and they're coming from NAIA programs. They're coming from Division II. It doesn't matter where you're at. You can be seen and you can be something special. And that's the one thing about the Frontier League. It's guys that are trying to get opportunities, and they're coming from all over the place and in different levels. If you're a baseball player, you're going to find a way to, you know, get to the top.
Have you seen the talent level risen with the 20-round draft? Have you seen the talent level rise in the Frontier League? I still think it's the best independent league because it's still a younger players' league, correct? You can't be a certain age and play in the Frontier League?
I've been there since 2012, and it's crazy. I mean, Schaumburg Boomers just had a pitcher that was sitting at 97, and he was there probably about 8 days, and the Phillies just signed him. So We've had, the velocity is just crazy now in the Frontier League. They're, I mean, 94, 95, you're seeing these guns, and being a guy, you're saying, well, why are they here? How did they get, but I
can't answer. There's not as many spots.
No.
There's just not that many spots for them.
And they're there, and they're in the Frontier League. And then you get guys that are like really good players, like we had a guy from Florida State, Quincy Neoporte, and really good hitter at Florida State, and came with us, and he was the MVP of the Frontier League. And you know, these guys are, you know, just still grinding. They're good baseball players, but the talent level is just crazy. It's crazy.
What's some other shout outs before I let you go?
What was that?
Shout outs. You want to give me a shout outs before I let you go?
Just want to shout out to everybody in, you know, Region 4. Wally Reynolds does a good job for us. Thank you. And just looking forward to this tournament, see what happens.
Appreciate your time, Bill.
Just make sure my defibrillator's ready for Gloucester.
All right, number one seed, SUNY Niagara, Matt Clearing-Smith, head coach since 2006, but right now we're running on a 49-0 record coming in, so congrats.
Thank you.
I was trying to think about the modern era because Shreveport's in a high school. They're both undefeated. And I don't think that's ever happened in the history of college baseball. So you guys are pressing into some unprecedented territory here.
Yeah, you know, I don't think about that. I just think one game at a time.
What is the strength of this year's club? I mean, I thought it was a typo, 419 batting average with over an 1,100 OPS for you offensively.
Yeah, our strength is offensive. You know, our pitching's no slouch either. Obviously, when you get a top 150 prospect, Matt Barr, committed to the University of Tennessee, our number two, Aiden Paul, committed to High Point, Eric Woodley, our number three, committed to Arkansas Tech, and our number four pitcher, St. Bonaventure, and our closer going to St. Bonaventure are all D1s and a respectable D2. But our offense has been unbelievable. A 1-9 can hit it out of the park.
What are some other names maybe we should be keying in on the roster this week?
Gavin Boyle, he's committed to Southern Indiana, an outfielder, returning All-American for us. Dalton Harper, our catcher, has done a great job, is already getting Division I interest. Our shortstop is going to Townsend State, Nigel Sebastianelli. We have a lot of D1s at the plate. Cooper Rosano is a Division I bounce-back freshman for us. Mikey Schaefer's been solid in the four-hole all year for us. You know, so, and Brady Hill, a Mercyhurst Division I commit.
What are some keys to developing team offense?
Have good assistant coaches. They make me look good. I'll be honest. We hired a new coach. Dan Brick this year has helped us, and Todd Mucklich has been really well offensively and helped us get back to our ninth World Series. But it's just keeping things loose in the dugout. And we don't talk about much on mechanics. We talk about getting our foot on time and being on time for that one.
What are some things they do training-wise with the guys that maybe you guys weren't doing before offensively?
A lot of heavy bats, you know, a lot of training that way. We also have TrackMan and other data, and we track a lot of hand speed. You know, the average big leaguer is somewhere in the high 70s, and we had some guys there, so we track a lot of hand speed and a lot of TrackMan data and backspin on the ball.
Do you feel like that's the biggest metric, hand speed, that you guys have relayed to your players that's helped them?
Yeah, because now we're living in a velocity era, you know, so yeah, hand speed is big for us.
Any surprises on the roster, good ones, the guys that are contributing that maybe you didn't expect coming into the year?
Yeah, Chris Finocchiaro, our starting center fielder, and he's got interest from George Gwinnett to Carson Newman, Division IIs, and really good NAIs. We recruited him as a pitcher, had an arm injury, and he's been a blessing in center field. He never thought he'd be a two-way. Runs a 6'3", 60. Has been clutch in our nine hole.
Have you relayed anything to the guys? You've been here before, so anything to the guys about preparing for this week?
I said, don't take your eye off the, you know, off the snake, because they'll come back and bite you. Just step on it. I'm like, every team here knows how to win. So it's a marathon, I say, because every team's got here because they've won.
You face any adversity during the year? 49-0. It looks like maybe 6-1 or 2-run games the whole season. Have you faced much adversity?
We have not, but we prepared ourselves, because like I always tell ourselves, our greatest opponent is ourselves.
Yeah.
We play ourselves in this game.
But that in itself is pressure. Like to get that sort of a win streak going, that in itself is adversity because you're dealing with the outside noise of keeping that win streak going.
Yeah, it is. We don't look at that. We talk about the next 90 feet for us. And our next 90 feet is right now, it's looking in front of us as Century.
I'm intrigued by just the rolling of it. How have your guys been able to just reset? Like, okay, that game's over with. We're resetting for the next game. So it is just talking about 90 feet?
90 feet.
Love it.
You know,
love
for
it.
Us. And then hopefully our 90 feet are to get through these teams and at home is our home run and hopefully to bring home a national title.
You have a large coaching staff comparatively to some of the other D3 JUCO teams. Is that on purpose?
Yes. The more eyes we have, the better our student athlete's going to be, whether it's in the classroom or on the field.
What did you learn from Mike McCray at Canisius?
A lot. You know, like me and him have a special relationship. He texted me. I texted him in the Big Ten Regional. He's been like a father to me. First of all, obviously how to pitch. You know, his staff's always been tremendous. And he took me under his guidance and talked about mechanics with me and broke down cuff elbow routines and everything. And the second thing I've learned, he is one of the best at managing practices. So we learned we take a lot of stuff from when he was at Canisius University and manage it into our stuff. And we learned how to compete against each other because that is our greatest component. We always talk about playing at this level all the time. Well, it starts at practice.
I think the thing I got from him, especially when he's at William & Mary, is he kept his set rotation. So, like, his Friday guy might start on Wednesday.
Yeah.
He just kind of kept the same four or five guys. Do you do that?
We do the exact same.
Love it.
You
love
know?
It.
And, like, our top draft pick, he's been our number two, and he's going to stay in our spot. We've always kept the same rotation. And we play the matchups just like him. If it's lefty-lefty or a percentage, yeah, we looked at what our matchups are already. We kind of over-prepare.
Are you still competing in the Mooney, in the men's league?
I do not now. I was playing up in Canada. I was playing in an indie ball league. And last year was my last year playing up there. But, yeah, I had a good run there, and I was up for Cy Young the year before that at 39. It was kind of like a Jimmy Morris story, playing in the pro leagues and still playing at 39, 40, 41. And having kids and getting in a clubhouse with 20-year-olds and 25-year-old men and Dominicans again made me feel like I was a little out of shape.
I mean, for you to keep competing at that level for that long, how'd you keep yourself in shape?
Again, going back to Mike McCray, you know, his lifts, his mechanical, kept my arm in great shape. You know, we always talk about glove side and catching your arm up to your body. And I really bought into that, and it kept me in great shape to keep pitching in my 40s.
Did you ever throw BP from full distance?
I did this year, and our team, I threw one hitter against them in 9 innings, which made me feel good. And then I'm driving home, I'm like, wait, I'm not that good.
Any other shout-outs you want to give before I let you go?
Yeah, I want to thank our school administration, you know, for the support that they give us. Obviously, our athletic director and our new president's journey. I want to thank my wife and my two kids and my family for all the support they give me because baseball is a long season. It is a marathon season, and people don't realize doubleheaders and how long it is. It's a thankless job.
Appreciate your time, Matt. Good luck this week.
Cheers.
All right, number 4 seed, Dallas Richland, Jimmy Brenneman, since October 22, correct?
Yes, sir.
Coming in with a 35-22 record, so congrats.
Appreciate it.
Congrats. Back-to-back World Series appearances?
Yeah, back-to-back. So Richland, I think I want to say 2009 was... until I had gotten to Richland the last time they had made it. So good to be back and hopefully do a little bit more this year.
What'd you take coming out of here last year?
It was just a really cool experience. You know, I myself as a player, coach, I've never, you know, made it that far in the postseason. So, I mean, that was just, you know, pretty neat experience. And now that, you know, we had a taste of it last year, now you kind of, you know, when you get knocked out, you kind of have that itch. You're like, okay, like I want to win it now.
Was prep then different this year as opposed to last year? Learning some things coming out here last year, did you prep any different?
I don't think so. You know, I think we ran into some really good teams last year, playing Gloucester, who, you know, ended up knocking us out. They put us into the loser's bracket and played Eastfield for like the 10th time last year up here. So, you know, we knew pretty much, you know, what we had to do there. But, I mean, as far as, you know, what we do day in and day out, you know, I would say we didn't necessarily change a whole lot. I'd say our team's a little bit different dynamic this year than the team we brought here last year. So
what's different with the dynamic?
Just kind of how we play. Every team I've had, we've been really aggressive on the base pass, and this is the least amount of stolen bases I've ever had as a head coach, maybe even assistant. But you know, we just banged the ball around the yard a little bit more this year, so I kind of had to pick our spots more, I guess you could say, when to, you know, roll the dice on when to run or not.
That's the art of coaching, though, is like you've got to tailor your style to your team's strengths.
Correct? Yeah, and like the thing for me was like I was a speed guy, you know. I was the guy, if I hit the ball on the top of the batting cage, my round was done, you know, it was on a line on the ground, and, you know, so that's kind of the style of the teams I've always had, and it just really wasn't the case this year.
What are the strengths of this year's team? Seems like pretty balanced between hitting, pitching, and defense.
Yeah, I think we're a little more well-balanced. I think we have more depth on the mound. I think we handle pressure pretty well. You know, as a former coach, you know, you're always trying to dissect stats, but like one thing that really stuck out for us was we've been really good in close ball games. I guess that would be one thing we did do different this year is we did a little bit more simulated inner squads where, you know, it starts in the seventh inning, it's a two-run, three-run ball game, you know, we got to hold a lead or, you know, along those lines. And personally, I think it's paid off just because we're putting them in that kind of environment a lot.
Yeah, you're cultivating late inning action, which is hard in practice.
Yeah.
You can't always emulate that unless you specifically put them in those situations to get them comfortable with being in those situations.
Absolutely.
What about some players to watch this week?
Probably our number one, Trey Smith. He's outfield, first base. We kind of halfway through the year started working that first base and did a really good job. I think he's maybe made one error there the entire year. Leads the country in doubles, sitting 440. With 12 or 13 home runs now. I think the impressive thing about him, you know, besides our conference, I mean, we're pretty much just surrounded by Division I junior colleges. So, you know, that's pretty much all we play in the non-conference. But Trey, his OPS and his slugging percentage is actually better against the Division I junior colleges than our own conference. So his average is a little bit lower, but I think the last time we looked at it was like 410. So he's kind of doesn't really matter who we're playing, you know, he's going to hit. And then probably on the mound, I would say Bron Farr. He's eclipsed the 100 inning mark. I think he's at 102 now. You know, not a ton of punch outs, but he's got four different pitches he can, you know, throw for strikes. It's coming this way and it's going that way, you know, I guess. Hitter's got to guess which way it's going. So,
was that your call to move him to first base, or did he come to you?
I would say it was our coaching staff's call. We felt like we had a log jam in the outfield, and just really had a hard time, you know, just creating a lineup. And that's kind of, you know, when we took off is when we moved him to first base. And then
he had never played first before.
No.
That's not so, people say it's like you can just throw a guy over.
No.
There, that's not, you have bunt situations.
Yeah.
Like where to play, like give him a lot of credit for doing that. For me, I think it's the most underrated defensive position on the field is first base. Because if you're bad there, it kills you.
Well, yeah,
if
100%.
You're good there, it saves you. But if you're bad at first, it kills you.
Yeah, and, you know, some of his other teammates, you know, obviously it worked out really well. But this late in the year, how much time we've worked on bunt defense since we've moved him to first. Just because, you know, he's a guy that – you know, hasn't played there. And I was a former outfielder. I told him, hey, you know, you run the bases during bunt defense, so you're not really, all you need to know is which base to back up. So just how much thinking is actually involved, especially at that position. So
any good surprises on the roster? Guys that you didn't think were going to contribute that have?
I wouldn't say I didn't think they could. We had a third-year guy this year, just kind of just rags to riches kind of. He's been at two different junior colleges. He tore his ACL his senior year in high school, Sean Amarante. I think he's hitting around 350 right now with 12 home runs, you know. And we had a lot of questions, you know, after the season last year, because he didn't play a whole lot, maybe only had 40, 50 at-bats. But, you know, the big reason we brought him back was because he was a great team guy. And, you know, I mean, I always say the game never rewards the wrong guys. And, you know, I think he's a great example of that, of, you know, kind of did his time and, you know, never complained one time. I can't think of one time he came to me and said, why am I not playing, you know? And, you know, he just worked his butt off and, you know, he was first team all region, all conference, and I think he'll be up for, you know, nomination for All-American. So pretty sweet for him.
It's almost like having a fifth-year senior at a four-year school.
Yeah.
Because he's seen everything he's going to see at that point, and you just hope that, okay, just go out and play now, because you've been through all the experiences that you're going to go through.
Yeah. I think the example for him is, you know, Trey Smith. I mean, he's a big, strong guy, but he'll be the first one to tell you, like, Sean can hit the ball further than he can. You know, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of the old Angels hitters. It was like Trout, and drawing a blank on the other one, but they would always say Mark Trumbo could hit the ball further than the two other power guys they had. And, you know, maybe he didn't have as many home runs, but they're like, no, you know, that guy's got the juice.
With your tough schedule, the schedule you got to play down there, how do you deal that with your guys? Because obviously your weekends might be a little bit different than your midweek games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially early on in the year, you know, we played a series with Bossier Paris. We went out to Amarillo and played, you know, played Vernon, who had a really good year as well. I think the best finish they've ever had as a program. A lot of that, I think, goes back to just how, you know, I was brought up as a player playing for Mitch Hannis, who's at South Florida now. You know, we at Lincoln, when I played for him at Lincoln Trail, we'd go down to Florida every year and usually, you know, just get our butts beat in. But I think just the figuring out what we're good at, what we're not good at, what we got to touch on more. You know, wins are great, and trust me, I want to win more than anybody. But, you know, when you're playing against really good competition, you know, you're hoping this is when it shows up. And I don't know if it's the reason why we've ended up here the last 2 years, but I don't think it's hurt us at all.
Do you feel like that helps your practices more too, because you do have a better understanding of what your team needs to work on, because you may be getting exposed?
Yeah, you know, especially, like, I mean, we hammer the two-strike approach. I mean, you don't get many days in Texas where you're not seeing, you know, 89-mile-an-hour fastballs, you know, with some decent off-speed. So, you know, just kind of keeping the guys glued in and locked. And, you know, our conference top to bottom this year is been a lot better. Just some new coaches that have popped up in our league. They're doing a pretty good job, I think. And you know, I think yeah, we may not have these, you know, eye-popping records or anything like that, but
you're here, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get into coaching to, you know, see how many wins I could have attached to my name.
What did you learn from Mitch Hanis and also Kevin Bowers, by the way, too? Because I say it a lot. I think Mitch is probably at least top 10, but probably top 5 most underrated coaches we have at any level.
Yeah.
But what did you learn from those two?
Just the toughness and the grind and, you know, just having the ability to outwork people, you know, and just really being prepared, you know, for, you know, when you might get that shot, because, you know, a lot of guys, you don't know when, you know, that shot might come. But yeah, I would say a lot of it, you know, stems back to my time with them. And
and good in-game decisions, I think.
Yeah.
I think great in-game coach too.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think I'd probably not here right now if, you know, had I not played for those guys.
Frontier League alum?
Yeah, way back in the day.
Me too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't last very long, though. I got a brief snippet of it, and then I realized I wasn't very good, so. I thought it was good.
You know, it comes for us all at some point. At some point, you're going to figure out, like, there's guys way better than me.
Yeah, 100%.
What do you feel like's helped you the most in your career at this point?
Honestly, it was probably my second year of being a head coach at Frontier. I, you know, was fortunate to get elevated to being the head coach there. I was an assistant for 3 or 4 years. Head guy left. He took another job in Mississippi, and we had a, you know, really good team. We had the best season that program's ever had. Won 36 games, made it to the postseason for the first time in that program's history. I think we had 9 or 10 guys go Division I that year. So, you know, for that to be my first year as a head coach, you know, I probably thought, you know, hey, I got a lot of this figured out already. And then I kind of got, you know, punched in the mouth, as Mike Tyson would say, my second year. Probably the most talented team I've ever had. And, you know, I think we went 23 and like 30 or something that year. Actually, one of my players on that team, he's actually playing for Mitch Hanis down in South Florida right now. I don't know. I think I kind of forgot who I was, you know. Having all that success year one, I definitely got wrapped up in just about winning and not really, hey, this is what you have to do to win. And I was just so focused on, you know, the end result, to where, you know, you could talk about, hey, that's the black eye of my coaching, that year of my coaching career. But for long term, I think it's been the most beneficial year.
Yeah, we talk about fail forward moments on the podcast a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it's how you deal with that part. And who knows, like, if you don't have a year like that,
yeah,
you may not be at the point you're at right now, because
yeah,
I think the game is beautiful that way, as it does humble you. Like, as soon as you think you have everything figured out with baseball's going to remind you immediately, whether it's coaching or playing, that you still have things to learn and work on. And I think you have to go through seasons like that to grow as a coach, because if everything's great all the time, you don't ever make any adjustments.
Yeah.
But I think you learn more from that, and I think you're a better coach down the road because you have some struggles.
Oh, 100%, you know.
Would you go back and do different, like, so say you're that first-year head coach, because we have a lot of first-year head coaches.
Yeah.
Say you have a year like that. What would you have done differently going into that second year that to maybe not have that happen?
Probably spend more time developing just the team culture. That's where I think I didn't create as good of relationships with my players that year. Because I was, you know, I was thinking about W's and, hey, let's try to go further in the postseason. And, you know, I'm a pretty laid back person overall, but I think I was looking at things just really selfishly. And, you know, if you're a coach, you know, your calling's to lead and lift these guys up. And if I had to say anything to any coach, you know, just getting into it, is if you get into it for yourself or the money, you're probably not going to last very long. Because one, you're not going to get much money when you start out. But, you know, if it's just about you, I mean, you know, when you're retired 70 years old, you know, that phone's going to be pretty silent when it's all said and done.
The game has weeded out most of those people. It will. The game is good in that way that if you're in it at all coaching for the wrong reasons, you might make it a little bit, but at some point you're no longer going to be in the game of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you got to love it, you know. So if there's a day it comes I don't like being at a baseball field, then it'll, you know, it'll probably be the last time you see me.
What are some other shout-outs before I let you go?
Shout-outs, probably some of my former coaches, Coach Goff at Purdue, Coach Hare at Ohio State. You know, big, you know, just a lot of things I learned playing for them. You know, I still interjected into my program, so especially the hit-by pitches.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Good luck this week.
Appreciate it.
All right, here at number 5 seed, Northern Essex, Jeff Mejia, head coach since 2013, but coming in with a 32-8 record. So, Jeff, thanks for jumping on with me.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
What's the strength of this year's club? I mean, it looks like 360 team batting average, 230 stolen bases, 3.61 team ERA. So that's impressive numbers, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, strength of the team, I'd say this year we've been able to weather adversity very well. We've been in probably more close games this year than in any years past, and they just find a way to keep getting it done.
At what point with the close games were you like, okay, this team's got to figure it out how to win those close games?
Pretty early on, actually. We started our season down at the Russ Mat down in Florida, and we had two seven-inning doubleheaders with Herkimer, and we got beat in one, and then the next one we walked off on them, and I was like, okay, this team's starting, this could be a fun year, and it just carried on up north from there.
Have you always stolen bases like that? Have you always run?
Yeah, we've always been an aggressive team. Philosophy's always, if we get a lead, we're going to be ultra aggressive. You know, if we're down a handful, we'll be a little more conservative, but, you know, we're gonna put the pressure on the defense. You know, being at the ABCA conventions, you know, I never miss a base running clinic. And, you know, Coach Roberts was the first one I really, like, took to. So we try to implement that as much as possible.
Yeah, how much are with your guys, how much is it hybrid? How much are kind of the new school stuff? How many guys are using the old school stuff?
Pretty much mostly it's a combination with our guys, you know, depending on the situation. We don't like to show a lot of the new stuff. That camera just went off, so I don't know.
It's still going.
Okay.
That's a good thing. I know it always shuts, but then it's still running. All right. It's still running. So when do you implement that with your guys, the running portion? As soon as practice starts?
Yeah, as soon as practice starts in the fall. We use our fall really to figure out what we have and then what we need to bring in for the spring. We play every weekend. We play a lot of Division I four-year schools up north for recruiting purposes, but we're implementing everything right away. We work on base running every day.
How many guys will you have come in at the break?
Every year is a little different. This year we had 4, I believe. Year before we had 2. Just really depends what we need. And, you know, with the state of baseball right now, especially with the transfer portals, one, a lot of guys get left out. Two, a lot of guys are getting, you know, released or you know, told to find someplace else at the end of, you know, Division One and Two falls. And if they're local and we've built a relationship with them, we could be a great landing spot for a lot of those. We've done really well with that.
With such a quick turnaround for those players coming in at the break, how do you help them acclimate with the team in the spring since they haven't been with you guys since the fall?
Yeah, so we go indoors. Our facilities doesn't really have a lot of spots for us, so we rent an outside facility, which is fantastic. And we just right away we get after it. Our fundraising actually helps us quite a bit doing that. We run youth camps, and all the players work them. So you mix the new guys with the old guys, and you know, just kind of like old school. Put them together, and they'll figure it out. Stay out of the way.
Who are some players to watch this week?
Manny Castro, absolutely. Third baseman, I think he's one of the better players in the country. Really can get it done defensively as well as offensively. Jacob Carter, our shortstop's another one. Left-handed hitter, not a huge young man height-wise, but boy, like when you see a swing, you'll understand. Another one would be Thomas Fratto, big first baseman. You know, our catcher's a freshman. He's got a big arm behind the plate. I think he threw out 17 or 18 guys this year, which is school record. And then on the mound, we have a couple sophomores. Ingberg Polino will come out of the pen. He's been really good for us. But then the freshmen. You know, you have Jack Sano, Eric Bridges, Lawson Birch, who's been on fire late in the season. You know, and Jack Kelleher, who's been out one, actually is coming back from a nose break in pregame Monday, the championship game. He was backing up third and took a ball. So he's coming off of that. But we're really young on the mound, but they've been outstanding.
Any good surprises on the roster? Maybe people you didn't expect to contribute that are contributing?
Yeah, we had a midseason transfer from Southern Alabama. Really looked at Anthony Marino. I mean, he's just a baseball player, right? He was a two-way at Southern Alabama. He had shoulder surgery, so he's not on the bump right now, although he's been throwing some bullpens. When he's healthy, he's a mid-90s guy. But we have him playing second base, tearing it up, and then you know, you get him on the bases, and he's something special to watch. So he's been a great surprise for us.
Eighth World Series appearance, correct, for you?
I believe it's 9 or 10.
9? Tell your SID to update your website.
Yeah, they haven't updated it in a while.
How do you prep for this?
So it used to be different. We used to have a week off because our region had an automatic bid. We don't anymore. So we have to go down and play the New York City regional champs. So there's not a whole lot of difference. You know, we finished that series on Saturday. I gave them Sunday to, you know, have a day off, and then right back at it Monday. We do our practices a little bit lighter than usual, you know, let them healthy up, just kind of walk through, keeping their confidence up.
With your freshmen, you've had so many throw innings. How are you kind of managing their workload? Maybe the most they've ever probably thrown in their life. How are you managing their workload this time of year?
Yeah, it's actually kind of the opposite. High school baseball in Massachusetts, you know, these guys will typically, all these guys are starters, and they would go every other game for their high school, you know, plus 100 pitches. So with us, it's actually been, we had to manage, okay, you have 7 days off now. You got to get your pen on this day. You know, you're in the bullpen. You might get an inning here, an inning there. So we've been keeping them live. I have a first-year pitching coach in Tyler McDonald, who played for us. Then he went on and played for Division II Franklin Pierce. He's been great with organizing the pitches. He's done a fantastic job.
You know, as to be expected with the schedule, you play early, probably going to come out of the gym and maybe lose some games, maybe that you wouldn't later on in the year, but you guys are 21-1 at that right now.
Right.
In your last 22 games, 21-1. So you guys are rolling. Yeah. You kind of expect that early in the year, especially going down to Florida and playing those teams, that it might be a little bumpy in the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it's a year-to-year thing. This year, being so young, you know, I kind of factored that in. We always put in. One of the things with Russ Matt I like is you can put in teams you would like to play. You don't always get them. I always put in for the hottest teams. You know, I want to see the competition. I want to see our guys, what they're going to do. So yeah, it was kind of to be expected this year. Obviously you go down there, you want to win them all, but no panic. We use it. We get a lot of guys, a lot of playing time. The goal with our Florida trip is to come back up north knowing exactly what we got. And then it's a lot easier if there's a guy that may not be getting the playing time up north when he knew he got his opportunity in Florida than opposed to a player never getting an opportunity. We don't over roster. You know, we'll keep like 28 active guys. So you're going to get opportunities with us. I'm a big believer in that. Maybe if we stop winning, I'll go to that. You know, some of these schools got 40, 50 man fall rosters. We don't do that at Northern Essex.
How are you blending your military background into your coaching style or maybe some leadership stuff with the team?
Yeah, definitely. It's adapted over time. I was actually just talking about it. My former players will say I'm a lot easier now on the guys than I was, 12 years ago when I took the job. But it's the military element is always there. We're very structured. Time management as a coach, I think, is probably the most underestimated skill. So I definitely get that from the military. My son, who played at UMaine, coached with me last year here. He actually just enlisted. He just finished paratrooper school, and now he's at in Fort Bragg with his unit getting ready to go to his next training. And, you know, he talking to him after airborne school, he's like, "Dad, I definitely see where you've built your coaching regiment and how we get after it." So, you know, the greatest uniform I ever put on was the United States Army. You know, greatest thing I did outside of my family was serving Operation Desert Storm, putting that flag on my shoulder. That stuff, I'm so grateful for our country to give me that opportunity. And, you know, my dad was a vet. My uncles were veterans. I have a nephew older than me that served in Desert Storm with me. So now my son's serving. It's kind of what our family believes in. You know, you serve your country, then you live your, you know, you live the fruits of that in, you know, the greatest country in the world. So
I think kids now need more accountability than ever. How are you keeping your players accountable? Might be different now and keeping them accountable than when you first started, as we all did back in the old days. But how are you keeping players accountable now?
Yeah, we take an old school approach to that for sure. Our standards do not, you know, dip. You know, we hold you very accountable. We don't have a ton of team rules. You know, run hard to first base, show up on time on the field. But off the field, we hold them to an even higher standard. When we leave, like yesterday we left the restaurant, I had a couple come over to me like, "Wow, what a bunch of nice young men you have there, very respectful." Little things like walking off the bus, thanking the bus driver every single time. When we check out of a hotel, you'll see our guys with the trash bags taking them to the dumpster. I believe old school stuff like that. Some people will say this new generation is pretty self-indulged, and that's fine, but we're not going to cater to that. We're going to do the right things on and off the field.
You know, people say that about this generation, but I think this generation buys more into community than the past generations. I think they're
Absolutely.
About building a community, and I think this generation buys into more about something bigger than themselves than past generations has.
I totally agree with that. I've been saying that for a long time, and I've been around long enough to see the different groups. This particular group, the last 4 or 5 years groups, they're very more accepting of others. They're very more group oriented, right? They want to be part of something. It's almost like they long for it because maybe they didn't get it at a younger age. So now they get to the college and now they're starting to feel like, hey, you know, this is about everybody's here to help you, but you're here to help everybody. I love it. I think this generation's, the country's in great hands.
Any other shout outs before I let you go?
Obviously my wife, my daughter. My daughter Isabella graduated Clemson. They had a good game last night and we were watching that. She was there during the Trevor Lawrence era, so she had a good time. And then, you know, my wife, I couldn't do this without my wife. I mean, she's the rock of my family. She's been through a lot and she's always there. And she could, during the
she didn't make the districts this year, but she was saying, she was telling me she was looking at the game changer, like, all right, get him up, get him up. So if she was a coach, I'd probably need 72 pitchers, because if you throw a ball, you're probably going to get taken out. But she loves it, you know, and, you know, any good coach will tell you, if you're going to have a successful life outside of baseball and a successful marriage, you have to have an extremely understanding wife if you're going to be a coach.
Thanks for time, Jeff. Good luck this week.
I appreciate it.
Appreciate you. All right, here, 8 seed Century. Matt Urs, our head coach, 4 season, correct, as head coach?
4 season at head coach at Century, yes.
43-9 record, congrats, by the way, especially coming out of the upper Midwest. That's a tremendous record. So, when did Century start? What was the first year of the school?
First year of the program was 2010. So.
I thought it'd been fairly recent.
Yes.
For you all.
Yep. The RAD and former baseball coach got it started and did a tremendous job going to the World Series 5 times. So this is the first time being back since he just turned into an AD.
What are the strengths this year? I mean, it looks like 358 team batting average and a 344 team ERA.
It's been, honestly, and then the one I think has been kind of the one that's not talked about is how well we play defense. It's been nice turning some double plays that we hadn't in the past years and just making the plays on a routine basis, and our pitchers know that they don't have to get everybody out now, have they? Yeah, it's been kind of nice, and the hitters, they hit, and it's fun to watch them. It makes me have a pretty easy job at third base, where I just have to point them in or shake their hand. So it's been a pleasure coaching this team. They've all three facets have worked pretty well.
Who are some players to key in on this week?
Well, the Seth's in the lineup for sure. They sit right next to each other in the lineup, Seth Nelson and Seth Tierney. Nelson has been our guy, just been probably our most consistent guy, and he has 15 bombs on the year, and hide him right behind a guy with 14, and then a guy right behind him with 12 makes it a little bit easy to make sure that they get a hit. Nelly's been moving all over the plate. He's been short, second, and first for us, and Tierney's been our DH first baseman, and they've been running into the ball. And then biggest guy has been our shortstop pitcher, Hunter Ginther. He plays short every day, and then when on the last game of the weekend, he gets to throw and blow it out for us. So it's been fun to watch. You know, he sits in upper eights, low nines, and it's kind of nice to have that guy as your four on a weekend.
How do you manage his workload? We get a lot of questions on dual players. So how do you manage his workload? Since he is your everyday shortstop but also pitches, how are you managing his workload?
More of it's been a conversation with him throughout the process and just what he needs and what to take care of him. The plus has been we haven't had to run him too long. And luckily in a fourth game against a lot of our teams, we've been in hand where we can give it up to the bullpen or the game's over in run roll. So biggest thing is having conversation with him. We haven't had have him play defense the next day other than the one game in the playoffs. So you talk about being able to help a guy out during that process. It's been really good. So it is a lot of conversations with the young man, and also knowing that he has the affinity to, I want to throw all the time and I can, so don't tell me I can't. And trying to understand what he needs to be successful. So.
With midweek games, when does he bullpen?
For this weekend?
I mean, because you're playing midweek games too. He's your everyday shortstop. Yeah. Not like you can just carve out, hey, go throw a bullpen, because man, I'd be starting to short that day.
He typically throws a bullpen on the midweek day after the game, or the next day is typically when he has done it.
Love it. Any good surprises on the roster? Guys maybe you didn't expect to have the years they've had?
A bunch of them. I mean, I guess the pitching staff just as a whole has been, we knew we had a good base. When we started off our second game, we gave a game to Iowa Central. We were leading and gave up 11 the next inning because of walks and not doing those things. Now, Iowa Central can play a little bit. Obviously, they're in the College World Series also. But the fact that we said, here, you can have some, and the conversation the next week was, if we're going to be what we want to be, that can't happen. And surprisingly, they listen, and we have not given teams opportunities to score a lot because we haven't, when guys get hits, there's not a walk or a plunk that gives them a run. And so just our pitching staff as a whole, I mean, Nathan Bunyard has been our front end. He's been awesome for us. And then Max Hudlow and Joey Koch, just been great starters. And then Shane Pellin, our back end guy, and Seth Luther, who was a starter, now is a back end guy. They've just done some great things for us, and it's a bunch of other guys that name the whole staff. But it's been fun, and being able to go to point down the line and the guy getting the job done for you.
What is it about Upper Midwest kids? Because their development timeline. Because how many of your guys played multiple sports in high school?
I would say most of them.
Yeah,
most of them. I love it. I know this body doesn't look
like it.
It's
fun to see them grow, though, like, because you know that's going to happen. They've played, you know, some, especially you get an Iowa or Minnesota kid, they maybe have played three or four sports in high school, or, you know, once they just decide to play baseball full time, they're going to grow.
You get to see some jumps with those guys. And I look at the three sport athlete. I was from small town northern Minnesota, so I played three sports. And the fact that I think you get around different teammates, you get different, find different ways how to deal with adversity or being a winner. Like, we have a couple guys that won state hockey tournaments, and if you've ever heard anything about Minnesota State High School hockey, it's nuts when you can fill up the XL Energy Center for five straight days and the whole state basically shuts down to watch, and you got some guys that have won championships doing that. So it's pretty cool. And you talk about that development bit, like, It's awesome watching our guys. And if there's something that's ingrained into our guys, they show up early. They try to beat me to the park, and which sometimes they do. Like, they're awesome in that. I was just talking with Matt with Niagara about, we do our PBR event in the fall, and how much they grow from that to now. And it's almost like, maybe we need to move it back, just because you get to see those extra couple of numbers that our guys can put up in that development. But overall, like, the development that those guys that are three sport athletes, you can see some big jumps out of nowhere.
Do you prepare any different this week coming out here?
Yeah, we were inside because it rained. This rain has followed us the whole way. No, but yes. I mean, yeah, it's literally been the rain that's followed us. But no, it's been get your swings in, take care of your body, and it's the time to just do what we've been doing and play your best baseball.
And that was one of my questions too about indoor practices. You know, how do you emulate some of that competitive stuff being inside? Because I think that's the biggest question we get from coaches is
compete.
Is how do we bring competitiveness to indoor practices?
It's a challenge, I will say. Just for me personally, when you're inside, I just feel like it's about process and skill set. So I think we get to spend more time on some skill set stuff than the South does, just because that's our only option. But trying to figure out little games, little twists to make it fun. Like, we played golf one time. That was entertaining. Golf with the pitchers. So if they hit a spot, it was, you know, this. And so then they got to play top golf. We've done some of those weird things. But, like, ultimately, you got to get guys that want to win and want to compete. So if they don't want to beat their roommate for dishes, doing dishes, like, then I don't know what you're doing here. Like, you got to win those little battles.
Any adversity for you all? I mean, obviously early in the year you get outside, you're playing, but you've been 38-3 since then. So, I mean, obviously for you, have you had much adversity here down the stretch?
Adversity in guys coming from injuries, guys dealing with a little bit of that. Like, our whole outfield had a hamstring issue, so this is the first time in a month that we actually have everybody back. We did get one injury in the championship game, but we'll see where he's at. The adversity is more the focus, like, that we've just had that. You can't give teams opportunities to take wins from us, and we took some midweek losses, but our guys bounced back from those well, and have had the maturity of, like, this is what we're here to do. Our goal, we didn't talk a lot about making it here. It was kind of, this is what we're going to do. Especially, we lost, I don't know if you know this, we lost 24-22 game in the championship, in the second championship last year. So they got a taste, they wanted it, and they, thank God, came through and took care of business and did it in really well. I mean, we 10-run three teams in the playoffs, and so, yeah. They executed when they needed to execute.
What were your biggest adjustments moving to the head coaching position?
You know, when I took this role, I moved over from, so I'd been a head coach at Dakota County and Mesabi Range before this, and this was an awesome move to a program that had won. The school is going to take care of me on the taking care of my family, doing all the stuff that makes the coaching part a lot easier. So it was one of those, like, yes, I got to do it. And knowing the head coach and being frenemies for years, that it was a good situation. So coming to a program that you look up every day and have to look at banners and know that that's the expectation and 30 wins is the minimum, like that was a little bit. That took a little bit, you know. You kind of think when you get it that it's all going to be hunky-dory and everything's going to work. And so through the three or four years, it was a little bit of, like, what works to get this team to get to where they needed to be. And obviously talent helps. I mean, weird. But there wasn't a lot of, like, game adjustments. I guess the biggest thing that I had to – my previous teams had to be a speed team, because my field is probably the biggest field in the Midwest at Dakota County, and now I played a little bit more hitter-friendly, so I can recruit some guys that play a little bit of that donkey ball. And so, like, this team's a perfect match of guys that can run into some balls and some guys that can run. So I get a coach kind of how they are. So that's what I'm excited about, that I'm able to do what is needed to do, not just say, like, we got to run or we got to hit. We can do all the things that we need to and be the best you. So,
what do you feel like has helped you the most in your career at this point?
Helped me in my career? Well, I guess, you know, support from my dad. Was a coach for 42 years, 38 as a head coach. He's in the High School Hall of Fame in Minnesota. Always having that support from family, support from my wife, knowing that I have a weird job and that things aren't normal. To be fair, I also made
it is normal for baseball. Outside looking in, it's weird, but if you're in baseball, yeah, like it's not weird.
But I also married a weirdo. She's a zookeeper, so she also lives a different life, and I have a hobby farm back home, so I also live a different life. So it is that, but a lot, you just throughout your career, I mean, I've worked so many random jobs just to make a living doing this, and the fact that now I'm teaching and coaching and have a stable spot to be at is awesome. I mean, I learned how to carry lumber. I worked at Edible Arrangements. I did a lot of random jobs just to make a dollar, spraying lawns, like, you know, that's what you do to make it. And I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I don't have to do it anymore. But yeah, it is the...
Because that makes who you are. Same thing. I think all of us had to... I harvested for a little bit. Like, I think we've all done that, but I think it makes you better for it. When you do get to a spot where you don't have to do all that stuff, I think it makes you better for it, because I think you appreciate where you're at a little bit more. You don't feel as entitled to it.
Yes, and I think it also helps when you have the young assistants that were like, well, why can't we do this? Why don't we do this? It's a little bit easier to have those conversations than, you know, the guy that just, you know, played Division One or Power Four or Power Five, whatever you want to call it now, and then did a little bit of pro ball, and now he's with us, and understanding that, yes, we have to get pizzas after game because that's the only thing our budget
laundry
allows. And all those things, that, like, those things got to get done, and they got to get done at an affordable price. And it is what it is. But yes, it does harden you in the fact that you know what it needs to get done.
Allows you to appreciate a little bit more then too, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. Any other shout outs you want to give before I let you go?
No, other than my wife and kids at home. I appreciate everything that they do, and just talked to them last night, and they're running around being crazy, so she's got her hands full.
Thanks for your time, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Number two seed here, Gloucester with Rob Valley. You've been on the podcast with me multiple times, but 50-6 record. I think it's the 18th season as head coach this year.
This is my 16th at Gloucester. All in all, I guess we're over 20.
20
now.
Now.
Yeah. Who's counting?
Yeah. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Strength of this year's club, 69 home runs, 388 team ERA, and probably not a great spring to hit a lot of home runs either.
No, we played in terrible weather all spring. This is one of the toughest ones I can remember. And, you know, really the wind, you know, played a factor in a lot of games. And most of the time at our place, when it's cool or cold, it blows in. So we had to manufacture and create some runs different ways. And in some days it played more true, and you know, we could run it out of the park. But there have been some days where we've had to create our runs, and that's okay, because I think we strive, our goal, and traditionally we're a balanced offense. You know, I'm not opposed to hitting a three-run homer, but if you're going to win 50 games pretty consistently and you're going to try and win a championship, you know, as often as you can, you have to have more than one trick in the bag. And we pride ourselves in being prepared to win in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and this week doesn't look like the weather's going to be great. I mean, you're still going to get it in, but that may be to your advantage this week because you've worked on it all year.
Let's hope. I'll take any advantage we could get this week.
Any players to watch this week?
You know, we our right fielder, R.J. Mastaro, his numbers indicate and his play indicates he would have had a great chance to be National Player of the Year. He missed a period of time. He broke his hamate bone earlier in the season, and it cost him 4 or 5 weeks. Sometimes that injury costs a guy 7 or 8 weeks. But fortunately for RJ, he was able to come back, and you know, he's playing, you know, pretty much pain free. So we're excited. He's our lifeline. He's our leader. He's a big hitter in our offense. So he's definitely a player to watch.
What was he doing in his downtime? All of us have had to deal with that.
Yeah.
At some point, because the rest of their body can move. You're just right. Waiting for the wound to heal, right. Basically. So what'd he do in his
downtime? He's a worker. What did he do? He coached first base sometimes. You know, we had to give him a job, you know, and because to be honest, I wanted him to feel like he was part of the team. I didn't want to just leave him alone and be sad. And he was starting to get sad. And so I kept coaching him. I stayed on him, and he would do some things. He'd do some top hand, then eventually he was able to bunt. But we sent him out to coach first base just to make him feel, and then I'm pressing him to do a good job coaching first base because I wanted him to feel like he was still in the flow.
Love it.
Yeah.
Any good surprises on the roster? Maybe guys you didn't think were going to contribute?
You know, we brought in the mid-year, and we expected it. We left a little room in our roster, our 32-man roster, which is relatively small by college standards, but it's large in for us historically. We try to keep 30, 31. This year we had 32, five mid-years, and three went in the lineup right away. So our Luca Reyes immediately plugged in the outfield, Nick Slojic immediately plugged in first base DH, and and Alex Apicella has played third base for us right away. So we were able to plug those guys in immediately, and it was a big plus for us. You know, it was a big boost for us. They solidified our team. And I kind of sensed that there would be mid-years, and we prepared for it, and we tried to identify the best players, and I think we got, you know, some really good ones.
Do you think that's the way of the world now?
Yeah.
With mid-year transfers?
Yeah. Yeah, I look at our recruiting, and I'd rather wait and recruit and make promises than make promises and have to go back and have tough conversations. So, I mean, there are so many transfers out there right now. How can we pass them up? Good players, good, you know, great people who will need a landing spot, and especially all these players who don't have a resume yet. You know, they're at Division I's, they're really good players, they don't have a resume. Come in and play and show everyone how good you are. That's I believe what will be our recipe for success moving forward.
How do you help those guys acclimate? They haven't been with you all fall. How do you help them get ready for the spring when they just got there?
You know, that's a little bit of an art. You know, just is blending your team and making it you know, welcoming to the new player, but the expectations, and nothing's handed out. And if I gave us any credit, we're consistent at treating everyone equally. I think the smaller roster lends to that. The expectation is high. You really earn your keep by your work ethic and how good of a teammate you are. So as long as someone comes in and plugs in and they're a good teammate right away, it tends to work out.
How's your prep? You had a fairly long layoff from the district tournament, correct?
No, just 1 week.
Just one
week?
Yeah,
we played last Saturday.
Just 1 week.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, just
so
one
not
week
a lot plus. Of time off.
No. So like a normal week. You know, yeah. We would have liked to have had a midweek game in there, but a normal week. And we had rain up at our place, so we had to move inside on Wednesday and Thursday. But we worked on the things that you could work on. We worked on first and thirds. We worked on bunt offense, bunt defense, pitchers through bullpens, hitters. You know, we tried to you know, continue to keep our swing, stay in the flow, keep our rhythm. So I think we're okay.
You think that's one advantage of being inside is fundamentally you're going to be better?
100%. 100%. It takes the X factors away of really, especially for a hitter, when you're inside, you're process-oriented. When you're outside, you tend to be result-oriented. Yeah. And we don't hit. If you came to watch us hit a batting practice, and I have to say this sometimes to some coaches who come watch us to recruit our players, we don't hit a showcase BP. We're hitting a process-oriented batting practice, and this is who they are, and this is how they build their swing every day. It's not a lift and launch. We're not getting excited if it goes over the fence. So, inside is kind of okay. And we have really good indoor. You know, we have 8 cages, 6 hacks. So, like, we can really get a lot of work done in an hour. Two players to a cage with every tool they need in there to develop. So we do it.
Have you faced much adversity this year? You started 19-0.
We definitely have. We haven't had at any given time, other than I think I'll be able to write it tomorrow, we haven't had our best lineup all in all at the same time. It's been a hamstring, it's been a hamate bone, it's been a quad, it's been a rolled ankle. We haven't had it. We haven't had it. And I think we're on the mend. I think we're just at the point where we'll write what we would consider to be our best lineup.
Did you say much to the guys after Brookdale?
Yeah. We talk more to debrief a game than we do to pump up for a game. And that was a situation because there's a lot of things moving. Like what will happen? What were the expectation? You know, I could have gone with that post game different ways. It could have been fire and brimstone and we're not good enough and I don't know what the bid. And I said, you know what? We've won 50 games and we didn't win this game. And this is a game we had won that against that opponent. We'd won that game 18 straight. So we expected to win. We had won that game 4 times. We've won by extended leads. But then we got our feelings hurt in the last day and we played poorly. So we deserved to have our feelings hurt. But I wanted to be honest with them because they have the internet. They could figure it out too. I said, we have won our way into the World Series. We have 50 wins. We've been number one in the poll from start to finish. We have had every first place vote from start to finish in the polls. We have earned our trip to the World Series. So we need to act like it, you know, and we need to prepare and I think they didn't know what to expect of me. So that was a Saturday. We took Sunday off. We go out to practice on Monday. I don't think they knew what to expect from me. It was very quiet. It was very quiet. And to me, I scripted it out. We had the plan. We were just rolling in like a regular practice. You know, this is the way we prepare. And by the end, and then by the next day, we were fine. I thought about taking them fishing, which we had talked about. But I said, I don't know if we deserve fishing, but we definitely deserve to have a real practice.
You know, they call it an after action review. Do you have a checklist, kind of a debrief for post game or maybe like the next practice that you go through the game? Like, okay, this was great. This is what needs to get better. Do you have a checklist that you go through?
It's not so much about what happened yesterday or what happened in the game because we can't control it. The biggest play of the season is the next play. The biggest at bat is the next at bat. And so really it's to put in perspective how did we get the result that we have. Win or lose, and what's next? Like, what do we then take? What's the message that we've learned, and what's next? It's always what's next. And I think that the culture of that, it's helped us in our lineup. You know, when you see your best player go down, it's next man up. We don't spend a lot of time in any of that talking about what just happened. We don't have our post-game talks are not very long. You know, and I sometimes look at the other team, they're on a knee and they're out there for a half hour. And I say, how much does this team want to hear right now? And it's not. It's what's next. What do we have to do? And it's more action oriented that way than a postmortem of, you know, how did we die?
Is there more pressure on guys during the World Series?
There, you know, we have in our lineup pretty consistently, we start 7 freshmen. And now in the pitching staff, we're a little bit more mature. And our pitching staff, I think that's where our growing pains have been. And 50-6, you say, how many pains did you have? But I don't evaluate it that way. Like, how can we get the peak performance? We have played like freshmen an awful lot. We've talked about we're not freshmen anymore. We're not freshmen in our transcript. We're not freshmen on the field. We're not freshmen in our playing experience. And we just need to make that shift, whether it be a mind shift or whatever it may be, that we need to start playing like sophomores, which is no veteran by any stretch anyway. But we just need to play. I don't know what the nerves will be. We don't build it up too much. So whatever they do. Now, we did a point of emphasis for us. There's a point of emphasis in our hitting talk every time. Our point of emphasis one day this week was breathe and composure. And we talked about, you watch any at bat, think about the most important major league at bats you've ever watched in your career. Go back and watch them. And I said, and we do this a lot, go Google, find out what was the biggest at bat, and then tell me what that hitter's composure was like. It's almost like they sleepwalk into those at bats. It's not no one's squeezing the bats, not rah rah. That, I think, was a bit of our downfall in the region tournament, is we didn't have the best composure we could have had. Sometimes the at bat carried into the defense, but we'll see. If the message resonated, we'll have much better composure out here.
I used to explain as they look like they're underwater. And when you look at flow state, everything is in slow motion.
Yes.
The best performance you've ever had is going to be in slow motion. So if you can put yourself underwater, it does allow you to maybe relax.
Yeah, and flow state, that's a term we've used. I read once they talk about the hard blue glow, if you've seen that term. Yeah. Yeah.
What are some other shout outs before I let you go?
Just shout out to my family at home who has been so supportive, and my kids have a million games this week, and my wife's running them all around, and she gave me the message she gives every year. If you're going to be away and leave me to get to all these fields and all these tournaments, you better win. So to my wife, Sarah, we're trying.
Rob, always a pleasure. Appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate you.
If you haven't made the trek to upstate New York and the Finger Lakes, I would put that on your bucket list of places to go. Beautiful part of the country up there. Thanks again to all the coaches for taking time out of their schedule to talk with me, and the NJCAA for always being a great host. Thanks again to John Litchfield, Zach Halen, Matt West, and the ABCA office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.